This is the MU Health Podcast. Here's Melanie Cole.
Glioblastoma is a rare form of brain cancer, and if you've heard about it, you might have questions about this form of cancer. My guest today is Dr. N. Scott Litovsky. He's a professor in chief in the Division of Neurological Surgery at the University of Missouri Healthcare. Dr. Litovsky, what is glioblastoma?
So glioblastoma is a tumor that grows in the brain. It starts in the brain. It doesn't come from somewhere else in the body. It originates from cells in the brain that are not growing properly. So the controls on their growth have, for some reason or another, and we usually don't know what that reason is, the controls on growth have gone away. And so the cells just grow and grow and grow.
So who is at risk? Because obviously, Dr. Litovsky, people get a headache and right away their minds go to brain tumor and they get scared and think of things like this. Is there a certain set of people that are more at risk for these than others? Or is this a random type of brain tumor?
This is, for the most part, fairly random. There are a couple of genetic syndromes where if people have them, they're at greater risk for this kind of tumor. But the vast majority of patients that have this type of tumor there isn't anything that would have said, well, this is a person at risk for that. So things like head trauma isn't associated with it. Using cell phones isn't associated with it. Living near power lines isn't associated with it. We just don't know why somebody would happen to get it, but usually not related to any specific factor.
So is there no genetic component to it at all?
Well, so there are some genetic syndromes. So for instance, neurofibromatosis is a genetic condition where patients can have a what's called a germline mutation. And so it's in all of their cells in their body, and they're at risk for something like this. There's also something called Li-Fermoli syndrome, which is it's not a similar disease, but it's also a genetic-based disease that is inheritable. And so if a person has family members with those types of diseases, then they're at risk for those types of diseases. The basis for growth of cells is based on the genetics within an individual cell, but that's not an inheritable type of disease process. So just because a person would get this type of disease and they have abnormal genetics within the tumor doesn't mean that they're passing that abnormal genetics to one of their their offspring.
Interesting. So then tell us a little bit about the symptoms that somebody might notice that would send them to see a neurologist or a neurosurgeon or their primary care provider in the first place, and then tell us a little bit about how it's diagnosed.
Sure. So the probably the most common symptom is going to be a symptom of headache, but it's different than the kind of headache that that we all kind of encounter. The headache tends to be a band-like headache around the head. It tends to not respond well to medications. It often will wake the patient up in the morning or at night, and then tends to get better a little later on in the day. So it's a little different than the headache that most other folks get. Other types of symptoms that patients can get are seizures, where they have uncontrolled movements, or they have loss of consciousness. Patients can have weakness on one side or the other of the body, depending on where the tumor is. So there's any type of neurologic abnormality. Neurologic symptom can be related to a brain tumor, but there's often other types of conditions. And so really the only way to know if these changes are related to a tumor is to get imaging of the brain, and usually we'll get an MRI to help sort that out. So the typical situation is the patient will have headache for a number of weeks, doesn't seem to go away, and then they may have a little bit of speaking issues or thinking issues or movement issues, and so they go see their regular doctor who orders an MRI, and we see where the tumor is.
So what treatments are available today? And, you know, because it doesn't have a great prognosis, does it?
Well, the prognosis is not good, but it's certainly a lot better than it was 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. And so there's a number of newer treatments that seem to be making incremental differences and improvements in how patients do. Probably the first part of treatment is going to be with surgery. And the goal of surgery is to be able to make a specific diagnosis and then remove as much of the tumor as possible without injuring surrounding brain structures. And patients that have a more aggressive surgery tend to do better than those that don't. One of the things that having surgery also allows is to determine the specific genetics within the tumor, because there are certain genetic profiles within the tumor that are associated with a better prognosis or better response to chemotherapy. After surgery and the patient recovers, then the next step is usually going to be a combination of radiation therapy to the brain, x-rays to the brain, around the tumor plus a margin, and at the same time, a low dose of an oral chemotherapy pill called Temodar. And Temodar, when it first came on the market, I bet it's now been over 15, maybe even 20 years, made a pretty significant difference when combined with radiation therapy in how patients do. So while the patient is getting the radiation, which is usually every day for about 6 weeks, then they will also have the low-dose chemotherapy pill. And then after they finish that, then we go to a cyclical or a monthly chemotherapy where they take the chemotherapy pill at a higher dose for like the first 5 days of the month. And then we'll continue that course. And it depends on who's taking care of the patient. Some folks will treat patients for 6 months with that cyclical chemotherapy. Some will use 12 months. Generally, I encourage just having the patient stay on it as long as they're doing well and tolerating the medication, because and this is not proven scientifically, but in my impression is that I've had a couple of patients that shortly after we've taken them off the chemotherapy, we see the tumor coming back. And so I have other patients that have been on the medication for a number of years, and the tumor seems to be held at bay. And so I just encourage them to continue to do that. There's a newer therapy that has probably been available for now a couple of years, and it's called Optune. And that is a treatment where the patient wears a it's kind of like a cap that has electrical signals that go through the brain. And so it's called electric field therapy. And they do this after the radiation, or can do this after the radiation. And that also has been associated with a significant incremental benefit in terms of how patients do. They have to wear it 18 hours a day, and so it's not always very comfortable. But some folks, even here in Missouri, when we have our 100-degree summers, will still wear their Optune therapy because they get a benefit from it in terms of their survival from the disease.
So what other promising new therapies, you know, are they using immunotherapy, CAR T cell therapy for any of this? And then when is it that you would recommend somebody, as Senator McCain did, he stopped his treatments. So speak a little bit about kind of the end of life and if they are using some of the immunotherapies.
So there is research looking at immunotherapy. There's a number of different centers that have their different approaches. I know Duke University is using an immunotherapy approach, and MD Anderson has an immunotherapy program that they're looking at. These are still experimental studies, and there are some good results that are reported by them, but it's still not what would be considered standard of care. What I outlined previously was kind of the standard care that everybody with this particular tumor should be able to get without necessarily going to a research institute. There are a number of other clinical trials that are available in different places for people that want to try something that hasn't been completely proven to be effective, but which may have some benefit. With regards to the second question about when is it time to say, okay, let's not do any more treatment, that's different for every patient. When the disease is come back and is progressing, so it's getting worse, and the patient's neurologic condition is getting worse, and they've tried other maybe second line type of chemotherapy, they've had additional surgery, which can all be done, but we're just not making progress in terms of treating the disease and the patient's quality of life is diminishing, then it's probably reasonable to say, okay, I think I'm finished with treatment, and then we make arrangements for the patient to have hospice care, which will allow a little more support for them and their family, and try to make their passing as comfortable as possible.
Then wrap it up for us. Doctor, what you would like the listeners to take away from what has happened recently and fears of these types of brain tumors, and give us some hope. Tell us what you would like us to know about glioblastoma.
Well, I think that the first thing that people need to understand is it's not a real common disease. So just because somebody has a symptom doesn't mean that that's what's going on. So that fear of that should be low. It doesn't mean that one should ignore symptoms, but I don't think that just because a new symptom comes up, that should be the first thing that leaps to one's mind as to what's going on. It is a treatable disease. I have patients that are now 2 years, 4 years, 6 years out from their diagnosis, and that's far better than the less than a year prognosis that patients had 20 years ago. So we are making progress in the disease, and so there is hope for the future that with the experimental work that's being done, and putting together different therapies that seem to have some promise that will make continued incremental improvement in how patients do. So I think there is hope for the future. It's hard to know exactly when those new things that are being looked at are going to be ready for people to be able to take advantage of. And know that those things are going to be more helpful than other things.
Thank you so much. That was really a great segment, and for sharing your expertise, explaining this for people that really didn't understand what it was and how it works and how it's diagnosed. So thank you again for joining us. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks for listening.